Title of my sermon today is Worth Waiting For. And the question that we are beginning with is, what is worth waiting for? As many of you know, I used to live in New York. And one of the weird idiosyncrasies about New York is that lines would just form places. And oftentimes, people would just get in these lines not knowing what they were for, because they figured in this city of people hustling and bustling, if they are willing to wait in line, there must be something worth waiting for. What is worth waiting for? I was thinking about this and I thought, well, good work is worth waiting for, which reminded me of this contractor joke. You want to hear a contractor joke? Hold on, I'm still working on it. But good work, it's a way homer. You'll get it on the way home. But good work is worth waiting for because it will take so much more time to fix shoddily done work. And the last thing that came to my mind was when I was a child and my mom would take cookies or a cake out of the oven and you'd want to get at it immediately and they'd be like, no, wait. You have to let it cool. I don't know if there are crueler words that can be said to a child than you have to let this delicious dessert cool. And when I was a kid, I, watching cartoons, believed that if you went out into the country, there would be pies on every windowsill. I've never seen a pie on a windowsill, but I was led to believe that there would be pies on windowsills throughout the country. But what is worth waiting for? That is our question. What about Easter? Is Easter a holiday worth waiting for? You know, it doesn't get as much buildup as the Christmas holiday does. You know, the buildup to Christmas is immense with movies and commercials and all this buildup. But in the church, actually, the buildup to Easter is a longer period of time. The time of Advent is about 25 to 28 days, depending on the year. But the build-up to Easter, a season that we call Lent, is 46 days, unless it's a leap year. Then it's 47 days, like it was this year. So it is a greater build-up, but is it worth waiting for? Well, Isaiah certainly thought so. He speaks of a great feast in celebration of everyone's eyes being opened and the world forever changing as fears and disgrace are replaced by salvation and rejoicing. And this was a great need in Isaiah's time. When he spoke these words, the nation of Israel in the north had been taken over by Assyria. The kingdom of Judah had been ransacked by Babylon. People had gone into exile. Empires were fallen. So for Isaiah, this day of feasting, this day of resurrection was not only worth waiting for, it became a foundation of hope that the people desperately needed. And so they waited and waited. But Isaiah gave hope to the people of God. Things are bad now, but God will make something from this tragedy. Even if it takes 600 years, God will create new life where there is death. And 600 years later, there was the first Easter morning. Which brings me to the Berkeley Pit. I want to tell you a story about the Berkeley Pit. This story comes from Hillside Community Church in Medford, Massachusetts. Although the Berkeley Pit is a copper mine turned toxic lake in Butte, Montana. So here's a little background. In the early part of the 20th century, Butte, Montana was known for its copper mining. And Butte was the center of this. In fact, at one time, a quarter of the copper use of the, in the world, a quarter of the world's copper came from Butte, Montana. But after World War II, the demand for copper dove quite a bit. And so the people who ran this mine said, we need to find a cheaper way to get this copper out of the mountain. Oh, I know what we'll do. Instead of going into the mountain, we'll blow off the top of the mountain and then go down that way. And that's just what they did. This cheaper, more destructive manner of mining copper allowed this business to stay in business until 1982, when the mining company finally went bankrupt. And they left Butte, Montana. And before they left, they shut off the pumps that they had been using to pump the groundwater out of the pit. And so the pit started to fill up with water. Just a little bit at first, just a little puddle, and then a little bit more, and then a little bit more, and then a lot more. Until at 40 billion gallons, the Berkeley Pit became one of the largest lakes in the United States. Now here's a little fun fact about the bedrock in Butte, Montana. It's full of pyrite, which you might know as fool's gold. I remember when I worked at the toy store, we would sell little things of pyrite. Well, funny thing about pyrite, when it is mixed with water and air, it becomes sulfuric acid. So now this Berkeley Pit was not only one of the largest lakes in the United States, it was a giant vat of sulfuric acid. This acid then leached out the heavy metals, like the copper and the other heavy metals, from inside the mine, and it became just this toxic stew of heavy metal and sulfuric acid. You could sometimes see a smoke coming off of the lake. Now we fast forward to 1995. This is when a group of geese were migrating and were flying over Butte, Montana, and got caught in a storm. It was too stormy for them to fly, so they did what any geese would do naturally when they see a lake below them. They came down and settled there in the lake to take a break from the storm. The next day, the residents woke up to 342 dead geese in the lake. It was not just a lake of toxins. It had now become a lake of death. Can anything good come from such a place? Nobody thought so. Scientists gave up studying it, didn't think that it was worth anything. And then one day somebody came in with a stick on it, with a sample of algae, came into the lab in Montana. Now it wouldn't be very remarkable. They came in with samples all the time, except for this sample had come from the lake. Somehow, some way, life had figured out how to live in this toxic lake. So then the scientists began studying the lake, began looking to see if there was more life, and what they found was this sort of black blob that had collected over the top of the lake. And it turned out to be a yeast that had a most remarkable kind of property. It was absorbing the heavy metals from around it. Now that in and of itself is not so surprising. There are a lot of yeasts that can absorb heavy metals, and they're used in various ways throughout the world. But most of the time, these bacteria or these yeasts filter about 10 to 15% of the heavy metals around them. This particular yeast was absorbing 85 to 95% of the heavy metals. It was actively cleaning up this toxic lake. It was acting as a sponge, soaking in these heavy metals, purifying the water. It would take what was once a toxic brew and transform it into a drinkable, showerable, teeth-brushable water. So obviously the scientists were excited about this. This was an amazing find, and they thought, we can't be the first people to discover this yeast. This must have to occur somewhere else in the world. And so they looked into their databases, and they ran through a search, and it came back with one hit. A single hit. In all of the natural world, this yeast only occurs in one other place. In the digestive tracts of geese. In the face of death. In the wake of an awful and unfair tragedy. There was new life. Just wait. Just wait. Like Isaiah told the people of God, just wait. New life can come from tragedy. Just like in the Berkeley Pit, there was new life was created in the midst of a tragic and horrible death. Jesus gave this same message to his followers. Just wait. Out of the unjust and terrible tragedy of the cross, God will make new life. And this only happened because of God's love. New life is created through God out of love. Out of a never-ending, uncompromising love. God's love comes into a world filled with pain, filled with tragedy, filled with violence, and creates new life. I believe that the resurrection and Easter morning is worth waiting for because it reminds us to believe in God's love. A love that always seeks to create new life, even in pain, even in tragedy, because this is a love that is eternal. It is a love that exists in the hearts and the souls of those who believe. And so it is a love that cannot be silenced. And even if it is silenced, it cannot be killed. And even if it is killed, it cannot be kept buried. For there will always be someone who looks at the injustice and the inequalities of the world and says, there has to be a better way. There will always be someone who looks at violence and destruction and force and how might makes right, and will say, there has to be a better way. There will always be someone who would rather lift up than press down. Always someone who is looking to love. And out of this love, new life is created. I see this in so many different ways, and I want to just share a few of them, three of them. I see this in the love that the caretakers have. Caretakers, particularly for people who are elderly, who are infirmed or very sick, or those who have special needs. This is Sunrise Memory Care Center on Highway 14. I do a couple of services for them a month, and I'm always impressed by the caretakers that are there. The way that they attend to people who are at all different stages of dementia and who are constantly giving them a sense of positivity, a sense of hope, even when they are confused, even when they are troubled. I see this love in artists. Artists who can see in a canvas or in a block of marble a beautiful art piece. A vision of what is before them. I share with you this artist, Sayaka Gantz, who's from Japan, although she travels all over the world. And what she does is she takes garbage, plastic, stuff people throw away. She compiles them, paints them, and creates beautiful works of art. This middle one here, those are all just plastic bowls and goblets, things that you might have, you know, and then toss, or plastic forks, spoons, spatulas. And she creates works. Some of them fill up an entire room, giving new life to what was once thrown away. Finally, I see this love in teachers, particularly the teachers in our school district, but teachers all around the world. The teachers who devote themselves to the education and sometimes have to fight for the right of their students to get knowledge. They do this out of love. And this is the love that brings us here. Not just here on Sundays, or not just here on Easter Sunday, but here to church. This is the love that brings us here, because when we are here to seek to find this love within ourselves. This love that God provides is a love that is within all of us. And when we are here to hopefully help cultivate that love, so that we might be the ones who wipe away tears. We might be the ones who take away disgrace. We believe in this love so that we might proudly say, "This is the Lord for whom we have waited. Let us be glad and rejoice in the salvation of God's love." Now, this love is not something that happens immediately. It's not just a switch that gets turned on at church. It's not just magically formed in us when we choose to believe. It takes practice. It takes cultivation. It takes experience. But if you stick with it, it's worth waiting for. And the people said, Amen.